There once was a person who said such amazing things and did such wonderful things that people followed him. I love these opening lines from many of the godly play stories that we tell about Jesus and his parables. I love these opening lines because they don't start with all of the baggage I have about Jesus and the church. I love these lines because they clarify for me why anyone would follow Jesus in the first place. They put me right there, having met Jesus for the first time, seeing him, hearing the stories he tells, and wanting to know more. There once was a person who had said such amazing things and did such wonderful things that people followed him. And as they followed him, they heard him speaking about a kingdom. The things he said were amazing, and they left the people in awe. The things he said were at odds with the world around them and called them to a new way of life, a way of life that promised flourishing for each of them, a way of life that promised the common good for everyone, not just a select few. And so all who followed in that way, that beautiful way, that Jesus way of life, found something new in the life that he lived. The things he said were amazing. His words comforted those who had been afflicted and afflicted the comfortable. His words, but more than that, his stories told of a day when the first would be last and the last would be first. And at first, people thought that he was promising revolution. At first, they thought he was talking about overthrow. At first, the people began to believe that he told stories where the roles would be reversed, where those who had been kicked to the curb would finally be in a place to trample their oppressors till they had a taste of their own medicine. An eye for an eye. But over time, it became clear that Jesus' stories did not paint such a picture. Jesus' kingdom tales did not set up a future where the oppressed would rise up to become revenge-filled oppressors themselves, but rather a day where lion and lamb would lie down together. A day when oppressor and oppressed would somehow, amazingly, inexplicably come to see one another as a vital part of an indivisible whole. Over time, it became clear in those early Jesus-following communities that the stories told, that the news he proclaimed, that the kingdom he envisioned and embodied looked nothing at all like the kingdoms they experienced, looked nothing at all like the striving power plays that they saw, that they themselves were a part of. And over time, it became clear in those Jesus-following communities that the kingdom Jesus envisioned would not be handed down from on high, but would be won with hard-fought radical nonviolence through God's grace by communities who clothed themselves in a Jesus-shaped love. Now, there's always been something about Jesus that has bothered me, and it's this. It's the way in which he constantly undermines my expectations, the way in which he constantly shocks and surprises me. It's the way in which Jesus, his stories, and his life constantly call me on my crap, especially those moments when I've come to the conclusion that my way is right and that I understand him fully. There are times that I think I've got this Jesus thing down, that I'm with him, that I've signed on the dotted line to become a part of his movement of reconciling love, and that he and I are going in the same direction, only to find out that I've wandered 50 miles down a different path and I'm about to get eaten by a bear. There are times that I think I'm with him, but I've got my eyes on the road in front of me. And I finally look, and I'm like, dude, where have you gone? And there are times like that, too, for this community. There are times that I think this community has got this Jesus thing down, that we're with him, that we've signed on the dotted line to become a part of his movement of reconciling love, that we're all going in the same direction, only to find that we've wandered 50 miles down a different path, about to get eaten by a bear. There are times I think that we're with him, that we've got our eyes on the road in front of us, finally to look up, and we wonder, where has he gone? Why have you left us? Why have you left us behind? But such is the life of faith. Such is the life of humans seeking to follow in the Jesus way. Such is the life of communities who are trying to figure this out. Sometimes we get it. We really do. Sometimes we're caring for the sick and the poor amongst us. Sometimes we're practicing what it means to treat each and every one of our number as indispensable to Christ's body. Sometimes we're bending over backwards to make meals and take them to those who need a helping hand. Sometimes we're working to connect other members of the community with housing or jobs or the help that they need. And other times, and I know that this is true of me, sometimes we're too busy, we're too tired, we're too fried to take this on, let alone acknowledge that the person across the way does, in fact, carry the imprint of divine love. A couple of weeks ago, I was in Haida Gwaii, that group of islands 70 nautical miles off the coast of British Columbia. I was there on retreat. It was a time of reading, writing, no arithmetic, thank God, primarily listening for a word from God. The past number of years, I've pushed myself pretty hard with my work, especially the past couple with the Mondi Cafe, the food ministry here at the cathedral. And it's been my goal in all of that to try to make space for more people to connect across the lines that would otherwise divide us. And there was so much good in the way that we used to deliver food at the cathedral, but part of the problem was the way in which we saw it. Part of the problem was that we saw ourselves primarily as delivering food to them, whoever they were. Those people who needed food. And what we failed to see was that what we all needed was food. We all needed company, and that we could find those things together. And so the past few years at the Mondi Cafe have been about creating space where we could not just have brief interactions and count the number of meals served, but to have real, authentic human encounters between people and to increase those year on year, day on day, interaction on interaction. At the core of that is the sense that the gift of encounter with one another would transform all of us. To steal some words from Jewish philosopher Martin Buber, my hope all along has been to create a space where we can engage one another in I-thou relationships, where what we do when we share food with one another is, as much as anything, beholding the people we're eating with and recognizing the image of God in each and every one. My hope is that the cafe becomes a place of encounter, where we experience encounter with the divine spark in people that we wouldn't normally associate with in the real world. And I suppose that's my hope for all how all Christian communities, including this one, might live too. There's so little of our modern world that operates in a world of I-thou relationships. Rather than beholding the divine spark in others, we are constantly categorizing people, imposing identities upon them without ever having truly beheld them, truly encountering them and the beauty that they possess by virtue of the simple miracle of being alive, created and beloved of God. It's not just in electoral politics that we other each other. It's not just in politics that we engage in hostility towards one another. It happens all the time in our daily lives and in our faith communities too. Even in communities like this one, there is the temptation to treat another person as a means to an end, as something that can be used for our gain or to acquire a new experience. Even in our faith communities, we can impose particular categories upon others, categories that help us make sense of the world, perhaps, but categories that do violence all the same. We do this particularly when we operate as though we are primarily individuals and not somehow deeply interconnected. While I was in Haida Gwaii, David Archer, who's a friend and former member of this community, his dog Zappa and I wandered in the forest at Port Clements, home of the famous golden spruce. And there we met a local. He was a former forester who had a, I don't know, come to Gaia moment or something. He used to work for the logging companies and has somehow become a fierce advocate for the protection of the rainforest. He told more stories than I could count, and we really did just have to go. But one aspect of his storytelling, more of a science lesson than anything, has stuck with me ever since. He reminded me of the way in which an entire forest is connected through a layer of fungus called the mycelial network. It's like an internet for trees. He talked about the way in which a tree in one part of the rainforest can send nutrients a distance of miles upon miles to another tree or group of trees who are struggling to find that very nutrient. The way in which trees miles apart can collaborate, can care for one another. The way young seedlings struggling for nutrients are sustained by more mature trees. The way that trees at the ends of their lives often dump their remaining nutrients into the network before giving up the ghost, or whatever trees do, to ensure that they're dispersed rapidly for all who need them. I'm so used to city trees. I'm so used to container gardening. I'm used to seeing all life, including trees, as individuals. My life can be very isolated from other humans, can be cut off from and independent of others. That's often the language and the grammar of a city. I'm here on my own. I exist over and against others. And sure, we have our own little tribes, but those tribes often exist over and against other tribes rather than seeing that we too are connected. We too need each other. Embracing one another in I-thou relationships demands more. It demands that first we see one another, that we acknowledge the belovedness of one another, that we see and start to experience one another first as beloved and gift, even when we enter into conflict. So the letter to the Ephesians this week reminds us that Christ has come to bring us near to himself and to each other. That he is our peace, and that in him the barrier wall has been broken down. In Martin Buber's philosophy, divine spirit is the breath that enters us and surrounds us. In this forest metaphor, divine spirit manifests in the fungus of the mycelial network. I've never thought about Holy Spirit as a mushroom until today, but it's something to chew on. That was pretty bad. In another letter, I've been practicing dad jokes. Anyway, in another letter, the letter to the Colossians, the author writes that all things are reconciled in Christ. It's not in the acts of power, one over another, such as that exercised by empires, ancient and modern, but in the beholding of one another. It's what we see when we look deeply into each other's eyes. It's what happens when we draw a deep breath. It's what happens when we pass the peace and really mean it. It happens when we meet another person without first doing the violence of judging and assessing them based on our own rule book instead of ideal characteristics. And there are times that I fear that we will never get to reconciliation. There are times I fear it is impossible for our country. There are times I worry for the church. And today I'm reminded that we are never going to be the people who reconcile all things one to another. The letter to the Ephesians reminds us that it is Christ's job. It's not as though we're off, but that said, it's not as though we're off the hook. As followers of Jesus and readers of the letter to Ephesians, we have a role too. And here's where we can start. We can daily take on the practice of looking for signs of the divine image in the people we meet, at work, at school, at church, in traffic, or even on the bus. What would it mean to treat the Maserati driver who just cut you off as a beloved child of God? I don't really know. I've never been able to get that far, but I'm working on it. And here at St. Bridget's, we have an even more promising opportunity. We gather here weekly. We meet in small groups. We throw amazing potlucks. We get together and share food and take care of one another. And as we do, we have the opportunity of practicing seeing the world as Christ sees the world. Not as a world full of enemies, but as a world full of people who are beloved, beautiful, and broken too, just as we are. We have the chance, like that of the early Ephesian church, to build a community, perhaps not of Jews and Gentiles, but pick your categories, insiders and outsiders, to build a community where the us gets to be just a little bit bigger and bigger and bigger, so that one day we might become a community that, in the spirit of Jesus, says such amazing things and does such wonderful things that people might be curious enough to join in following him.